The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally, we have Nicholas St. Fleur to give us a rundown of some of the stories from our daily news site. First off, we have a pretty interesting story about artificial jellyfish. So these researchers created a sort of Franken-jelly. What does a real jellyfish have to do to move?
So jellyfish move rather rhythmically. What they do is they flex their muscles and then they expel water, taking on a dome shape as they glide through the water.
So how on earth do you make a fake jellyfish?
Well, what these scientists did was, after analyzing how the jellyfish moves and how the jellyfish acts and more of its mechanics, they took silicone and transplanted cells from a rat's heart to make the shape of the jellyfish. So it's a silicone schematic powered by rat DNA.
Okay, that's really cool. But I know the scientists went through a lot of trial and error to get the Franken jelly to actually swim. So what were some of the problems with their design and how did they overcome their obstacles?
Some of the different problems they faced were designing the correct type of silicone layers to best mimic the different types of movements that this jellyfish creates. Another problem that they had was actually bringing it to life. So what they did was they put the Franken jelly into some salt water. They ran an electric current and then, boom, it's alive. It's like Frankenstein straight out of the classic.
So Frankenstein has his new pet.
Exactly.
Okay, but this all goes beyond fake jellyfish. What are some of the more practical applications of this technology?
So the main application of this activity is in creating new heart devices, artificial heart devices. The synthetic jellyfish comes into play because the motions that the jellyfish uses to move are comparable to the same motions that the heart valve uses to pump. When the heart's beating, it has a valve, and the valve lets blood come in and go out, much in the same way that the synthetic jellyfish moves.
Mm-hmm.
So by applying this type of technology to future heart valves, they may be able to make better heart valves, and they could also use this technology to test out different types of heart medicine, heart drugs, by testing it on the actual synthetic jellyfish to see how it makes that jellyfish react.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So jellyfish may end up saving our lives someday. So next off, we move to what seems like a scene from a teenage horror film, as you put it. In our next story, we have bats preying on copulating houseflies. Now, we know that bats typically find their prey through echolocation, but the situation is a little bit different here, isn't it?
So typically, bats use echolocation to find their prey. With echolocation, the bat sends out signals that bounce around the surrounding environment and send back echoes that the bat can pick up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like looking into a dark room with a strobe light. So this is normally how bats find their prey. But that wasn't the case in this instance. So what you have here is a cow shed that's covered with about 9,000 flies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty stinky area.
Yeah.
The flies are just buzzing around during the day. But at night, they fly to the ceilings and they go to sleep or they do other activities.
Like what?
Like copulation. So when the flies rest on the ceiling, they're actually protected from the bat's echolocation. So when the bat sends out his signal and it hits the ceiling, well, this ceiling is covered with a bunch of tiny bumps, which are about the same size as the flies. So when that signal comes back, instead of seeing where the flies are, the bat gets a message full of bumps, little tiny bumps that it can't discern whether what it's seeing is a bump or a fly.
Mm-hmm. So if they're invisible, how are the bats able to find them?
That's exactly what the researchers were trying to find out. The bats were able to pick up on a certain noise that the flies made while they were mating. It was a clicking noise, which to us sounds more like a buzz. But to the bats, it was more of a signal telling them that there's something going on over here. So what the researchers found is that the bats would hear this noise, home in on it, and then fly to the copulating flies, swoop them up in a process known as gleaning, which is when a bat takes a prey off of a surface. So they'd swoop in, grab the flies, and head out with a two-for-one dinner.
How did the experimenters actually confirm that it was the buzzing noise that attracted the bats?
Well, that's a great question. So what the researchers had to find out was whether it was a clicking noise that the flies were making that cued in the bats, or if it was just having two flies on the ceiling, which created a larger target for echolocation.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they set up four speakers hanging from the ceilings that would play recordings of the copulating flies. So it would play that clicking noise. So when the researchers played this noise, the bats would come in and attack the actual speakers, thinking it was prey.
Mm-hmm. So if buzzing can get them eaten up, then why don't the flies keep the noise down?
So what the researchers found is that it's actually the male housefly that makes this noise, this clicking noise. So looking at previous studies, what different researchers found is that the clicking noise is part of the male fly's courtship ritual. So the male fly will click his wings to show the female that he's basically worthy to mate with. The female would only allow the male fly to mate with her after he produced these sounds. So no noise, no mating.
From houseflies dying in the throes of passion to Neanderthals perishing in Central and Eastern Europe. But for Neanderthals, the reason seems a bit less certain. So there's a long-standing debate over just why the Neanderthals disappeared. What are people saying about this? What are the two sides?
So right now, scientists aren't too sure why the Neanderthals disappeared. There's a theory that the Neanderthals were killed off by humans, Homo sapiens, who are emerging around the same time period. There's also the theory that climate change may have led to their demise. And there's another theory that a super volcanic eruption helped cause their ultimate destruction.
Okay, so we have a lot of things going on here. The presence of modern humans, the eruption, the cold spell, and the disappearance of the Neanderthals. So what was the solution the scientists came up with to find the correct sort of order, the timings?
First is the idea that this super volcanic eruption occurred around 40,000 years ago. So recently, scientists found out that this particular eruption was actually 2 to 3 times more massive than they had thought. With the explosion comes massive amounts of volcanic ash, which was thought to be linked to a climate change that happened at that period, in which globally, the temperatures were cooled by 2 to 3 degrees. What the scientists tried to discover was whether or not this massive explosion happened before the Neanderthals disappeared or after the Neanderthals disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So what the scientists investigated was a different type of volcanic glass.
Mm-hmm.
So this type of volcanic glass was much smaller and easier to detect at a wider range than the previous study that mm-hmm. looked at this.
So it spread out to sites that had previously been inaccessible to them?
Right. They looked to see where those glass pieces were in relation to Neanderthal tools and human tools. So by looking at the sedimentary layers, they found the time period when Neanderthal tools were no longer used and Homo sapien tools started taking over. So this time period signified when Neanderthals died out and when Homo sapiens came to predominate. So after looking at this region, they found that the glass particles were on top of this region, meaning that they were younger particles than the layer at which Homo sapien tools predominated over Neanderthal tools. So what this means is that this volcanic explosion happened after the Neanderthals died out.
So what does this tell us about the climate change theory?
So this finding isn't conclusive in completely ruling out that climate change may have had a hand in the Neanderthals disappearing. So basically, that adds stronger evidence that humans, not volcanic explosions, were the cause of the Neanderthals dying out.
So what are some other stories we have on our online daily news site?
One story we have on the website is about selfish sheep and the reasons why they stay in the herd. Another story we have is about how scientists recreated mother of pearl, which is the mineral material inside of shells. So from Science Insider this week, we have a story about conflicts of interest and fracking. And then this week in Science Live, where we chat about the hottest topics in science, we have a discussion on invasive species and whether or not they're misunderstood. For next week's Science Live, we have a chat about the landing of the Mars rover. Be sure to check out these stories and more at news.sciencemag.org.
Thanks, Nick. Nick is an intern at the Science News site. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog Science Insider at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.